What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Top players to avoid this year, based on their ADP, going a little bit too high. We won't call them busts, but just guys that we're not really that excited to draft at their ADP. We'll take someone else at the same position just a little bit later. Welcome to the show. This is your Thursday edition of Fantasy Football Today. I am Adam Azer. I got Heath Cummings here, and Dan Schneier is back. Now, Dan, before we get into the players to avoid, we have to play a game called Guess Heath's Sleepers. Heath is finishing up his second sleepers column. I don't know. You're an editor, so you see all the stuff. So I don't know. Have you seen the column yet?
He has not.
I have not seen the column yet.
Okay.
It's still in the works.
I
think I can participate.
I can give you like positional clues. I can tell you there are two quarterbacks. Okay. I used Fantasy Pros consensus expert rankings and just wrote this as these are the guys the industry is sleeping on. So there are two quarterbacks outside of the consensus top 10. One's actually outside of the top 20.
All right. I'm going to guess
Taysom Hill is one.
Joe Burrow is one.
Neither Joe Burrow or Taysom Hill is correct.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
No, but you got his first name correct.
Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill is currently 11th by the consensus rankings. I have him 7th, which is no, there's no expert in the industry that has him higher than 7th.
Okay.
Despite the fact that only two quarterbacks have scored more fantasy points than he has since he became the starter for Tennessee.
Wow, that's a good stat. Who's the other one not in the top 20? I'm surprised it's not it's not Gardner Minshew, is it?
Close enough. It's Trey Lance.
Trey Lance. Okay. All right, let's do one more position. How many wide receivers?
There are three wide receivers, and we talked about two of them this week on a podcast.
Talked about two of them this week.
Mike Williams.
Incorrect, but we will talk about him more later. And
he might be out. He might move into the list.
He might move into the list.
T.Y.?
T.Y. Hilton is correct.
Okay.
Is it Minshew?
Currently wide receiver 52 by the consensus rankings.
Gardner Minshew, is he a wide receiver now? All right, let's say one more guess at Heath's wide receiver sleeper.
Marvin Jones?
Yeah, probably.
Nah.
Incorrect. It's Antonio Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And Mecole Hardman.
Okay.
Hardman is wide receiver 60.
I like literally all three of those picks.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, that was all the picks you've made.
Basically yesterday's show, so tune into that one. But today, it's a little bit more negative. Guys that we think are being drafted a little bit too early. And you know that there are just some players that you like them, but you don't like them as much as everybody else, and you don't think you're going to end up with them. So maybe there's some of those on this list. Let's get your top player to avoid is really not the best way to put it. But there's one player that headlines your avoid list. Heath, who would your one player be?
Unfortunately, I think it has to be James Robinson. As much like talk about a sleeper, the very best sleeper of the 2020 fantasy football season. And somehow, even when you look at ADP, just since the start of June, like everyone fully aware that Jacksonville has drafted a running back in the first round, James Robinson is still pick 60 in overall ADP, a fifth round pick. And I just can't imagine. It's certainly possible that they're going to play Etienne as a slot wide receiver and as a gadget type guy, and James Robinson is still going to get 15 carries. I think that's really unlikely. It'd be terrible for Laviska Shenault if that's what happens. I think there might be 15 carries a game and no targets early in the season, and it will only get worse from there.
Okay. So would you take him 70th overall?
Oh, no. No, every one of these players, except for one, I think. Every one of the players but one, I was more than 20 picks behind what their ADP is. On Robinson, I'm actually 40 picks in PPR behind what his ADP is. I would not take him until round 9.
Okay, last question. You can both answer this. James Robinson or James Conner?
Conner.
I'm Conner, slight edge, though. I don't really want either on my team.
I think it's way more likely that James Conner turns into the lead running back in Arizona than that James Robinson holds on to that for a full season.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't disagree, but just the follow-up would be like, but he was so good last year, so why not?
I mean, James Conner's had some phenomenal years playing football.
But not recently because he's been so hurt.
Yeah.
You know.
The why not would be because they took a running back in the first round.
Yeah. All right. So, Dan Schneider.
The why not would also be, I'm just going to jump in real quick, is that this Jacksonville Jaguars offensive line is still terrible. Their defense is beyond bad. It's going to be bottom five again. That's 2 years away. And so where are the touches coming from? Unless you're assuming James Robinson will be the third down and the passing down back, which I don't think anyone is assuming, and it doesn't really make sense. It seems like the game script just won't be there for him.
All right, who's the headliner on your list?
Okay, the headliner on my list is TJ Hockenson, currently at an ADP of 65. I cannot understand this one at all whatsoever. So I'm going to give a few stats courtesy of our friends here at FFT. The first one's courtesy of Chris Towers. He said, over the last 15 seasons, among tight ends, TJ Hockenson's ranks 12 in receiving yards, 11th in reception, 16th in yards per route run, 11th in touchdown, 16th in yards per target in their first two seasons. Does that scream breakout to you at tight end? Not me. Then the other assumption here is that the volume is just going to be through the roof for Hockenson. But why are we assuming that? NFL offenses don't typically operate through the tight end as the number one read. The Raiders are one exception to that rule. And looking back at some of the stats that Dave provided, this was a while back right after the Super Bowl, when he was breaking down new offensive coordinators and what their impact could be on the new teams they're on. And he was breaking down Anthony Lynn. According to Dave's research, his offense did not heavily target tight ends. 19.6% of the targets went to tight ends in 2020. In 2019, it was 17.4%, and as low as 13.8% of targets to tight ends in 2018, and receivers tripled the targets there. So I don't think this offense is going to run through Hockenson at all, just because NFL offenses typically don't. I'm not excited about this offense at all with Jared Goff. He has to build a brand new rapport with a quarterback after building, 2 years or, 2 years worth with Stafford. To me, this just seems like a total avoid here. I'm like Heath said with Robinson, I'm not taking Hockenson for another 40 picks. He's a 10th, 11th round guy. I don't really see the appeal here.
Well, first of all, Anthony Lynn had Keenan Allen in his offense. And if the Lions had Keenan Allen, I guarantee you people would not be as high on TJ Hockenson as they are.
But how many NFL offenses run through the tight end?
Well, the Eagles did when Zach Ertz was their best option.
Yes.
Travis Kelce leads the team in targets typically. So when your tight end, what's that?
Waller and Kittle too.
When you're,
there's like five. Yeah.
Waller for sure.
When your best option is a tight end, I think we have seen that NFL teams will run through their tight end. Did Evan Engram lead the Giants in targets last year? I think he may have.
No.
I mean, it was pretty bunched.
The thing that Dave talks about, and we'll go back to Dave again. And I've talked about Anthony Lynn's usage of the running backs. Consistently, year over year over year, you're looking at 30 plus touches per game for the running backs, which is why the committee doesn't scare me as much when he's in charge. It's very rare for teams to have a high percentage of their targets going to running backs and a high percentage of their targets going to tight ends, because those are short area targets. I think
that's Lynn's
reliance on the running backs could really negatively impact the tight end targets.
But that is Goff. I mean,
and
Goff,
what about Tyler Higbee as well? He was billed as the breakout last year. Higby was billed as the breakout
because
last
they had
year with
Kupp
Goff,
and Woods.
We haven't really seen Goff.
But they have Kupp and Woods. That's the whole point of the argument.
I know,
by
but
the
still,
way, I host a Giants podcast. Evan Ingram did lead the Giants targets by 13 last year with 109.
I knew that might have been wrong when I said it. Okay. I was hesitant to say no there. I felt it felt bad right off the top.
Look, Hockenson was the number 5 tight end in fantasy last year. He was number 7 per game in PPR, and he didn't really have that good of a year, but he had 101 targets. You talked about game script and how it's going to be bad for James Robinson. Well, you think it should be pretty good. I mean, you think they would be able to, they would be throwing the ball a lot. This defense is also going to be terrible. This team is going to be bad, and people are really just relying on the targets, and targets really make a huge difference for tight ends. I can give you the numbers in a moment, but yeah, I mean, I'll give you the numbers, but
volume is the key in fantasy. I just don't know that we can guarantee this volume with a new quarterback who has no rapport with him.
Who else is
and with the fact
it?
That almost very few NFL offenses run through the tight end, especially as Heath mentioned, one that has so many targets going to the back.
So who's
going
to get the targets? Because the new quarterback has no rapport with anyone. Everyone is new to him. And
agreed.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just don't see too many plays where the first read is going to be Hockenson on the play. It just doesn't that works with even when you talk about, you know, Travis Kelce leading the team of targets. A lot of the reason for that is because of the way Reed designs that offense, because defense has to leave a safety over the top to account for Tyreek Hill. So it leaves that open in the open middle of the field with no safety in there, vacant for Kelce to get those targets. And also he's an incredible player. But the only real offense that really runs through the tight end schematically is over there in Las Vegas with Waller. And I just, everything Lynn's shown in his past tells me that this offense is not going to operate through the tight ends. I mean, as low as 13.8% targets in 2018. And that was, you know, their tight end situation in Los Angeles has never been too much worse than what we're going to see. And also the deal with Hockenson is he was billed as a two-way tight end coming out. He was a top 10 pick for sure. But at the same time, he was picked there because he was a great blocker as well. He wasn't George Kittle coming out, who had converted from receiver to tight end at Iowa. So I don't know all of a sudden that we can expect TJ Hockenson to be just this game-breaking receiving first tight end in his third season after not showing it at all really in the first two seasons.
I think that's part of the problem is like TJ Hockenson got a lot of targets last year for a tight end.
Right.
Yep. And he turned 101 targets into 723 yards. And that was way more efficient than he was as a rookie. So he doesn't have to get top 5 targets for a tight end. He needs to be like up there in the 120, 130 range, or he has to make a drastic leap in his efficiency in what we think is not a very good offense with not a very good quarterback.
Right.
Yeah. So there have not been, so from 2017 to 2019, there was not one tight end who got more than 90 targets and finished outside the top 10. All right, top 10 is not great, but if you get 90 targets, you're probably going to finish outside the top 10. Until last year, when four tight ends got 90 or more targets and finished outside the top 10. So that was weird. That's in full PPR. Every tight end in the last 5 seasons who has finished in the top 5 has been first or second on his team in targets. So that is a big thing, except for Robert Tonyan. He's the only one, and he was only 4 targets behind, three targets behind second place on the Packers last year. But if you lead your team in targets, that is a great start. Okay, yes, he has to play better. He has to be better. But if you lead your team in targets, like I said, I'll repeat that stat. Every top 5 tight end in the last 5 seasons, except for Robert Tonyan, who had basically the luckiest tight end season we've ever seen, was first or second on his team in targets. So that's a great start right there. And I don't see how he's not going to be first or second on his team in targets. You say the offense isn't going to run through Hockenson. I would argue that it probably didn't run through him last year, and he still got 101 targets. So I don't know that it needs to run through him. But the bottom line is, I mean, he's going to get the target. I think he's going to be targeted. I think he's going to have more targets per game this year than he had last year. I'm not super excited about him for any reason other than volume. I totally get what you're saying in terms of performance. And when I see that Andrews is going equally to Hockenson, you know, a lot of people are going to put Hockenson ahead of Andrews. I don't think you guys are. But, you know, he's going behind Pitts now, I think. So, I don't know. I mean, there's a big difference between him and the guys behind him, I think, you know.
But well, I would ask you this, Adam. If you're drafting a player like Hockenson, are you really trying to get like the 6th best tight end, or are you trying to get a difference maker at that position? Because when you're taking somebody at 65 like Hockenson, you're passing up on players like Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins, DJ Chark, who can be potential difference makers on your fantasy team. And just because you're finishing in the top six of tight end, unless you're reaching that bar that, you know, the Waller and Kittle on a per game basis and Kelsey put up last year, you're not getting too much of a difference maker at that position. So it's not that important to finish with a tight end six if he's not scoring that many points, in my mind.
Agreed. I think that I see a higher ceiling than you do for Hockenson, obviously. And while I do, I don't really like Chark, but I like Ayuk and Higgins in a vacuum much better than I like Hockenson. If Hockenson and Andrews are going, and you look at ADP, they're like tight end 5-6, right? I think Pitts has jumped them at this point.
I've got it right here. And that's the thing I was going to say. Yeah. Like Hockenson is two spots ahead of Mark Andrews.
Right.
Mark Andrews is 64, Hockenson 62. Dallas Goedert is 20 picks behind TJ Hockenson.
All right. So let me just finish my point. I know I've monopolized this and I'll let you go. Higgins and Ayuk, right? Like they're better, but with Hockenson and Andrews right there at 63 and 65, basically overall, I view them really as, I know it's not going to play out this way. Cause you know, it's just not like there are going to be some surprises. I view them as the last chance to get a stud at tight end.
We don't have a real reason to think Hockenson is a stud.
I think he could be a PPR stud because I think he could be, you know, third in catches at the position or something like that.
Is this because Zach Ertz is not gone yet?
No, it has nothing to do with Ertz. It has more to do with her. I don't view Goddard the same way now that they have Devontae Smith.
But he's been mostly better.
He has, but you know what? You can, like, if you just did all your fantasy rankings on who was better last year, then what's the point of doing rankings? I'm projecting Hockenson to take a leap.
Hockenson was better last year. He just hasn't been better on a per target or per catch basis.
I think they're gonna throw a lot more than the Eagles, and I think he's gonna get a lot more targets than Goddard. I think a lot of people do. That's why he's going 20 spots ahead. But anyway, what I was saying is I don't think that's your last chance with Higgins and Ayuk, not your last chance to get a star breakout wide receiver. I do think that this is your last chance, unless it's Goddard. Maybe you like Goddard, whatever. For me, the Andrews-Hockenson decision there, last chance for me to realistically think I have a chance at a difference maker at tight end.
And I don't agree with Dan as far as the TJ Hockenson pick 100 thing. But I would much rather take Dallas Goedert in round 7 or Noah Fant in round 8 than TJ Hockenson at the 5-6 turn.
And I think that was a bit of an exaggeration by me before. I agree with you, Heath. I wouldn't go as far as 100, but I will say this. Adam's saying, you know, you're not going to see too much of a drop-off at receiver if you miss on those guys. We both think there's a potential high-end ceiling for the DJ Chark, Chase Claypool, and Brandon Ayuk's of the world. But as you go into that next round, if you pass on one of those guys for Hockenson, you're looking at Robbie Anderson type. You're looking at Jerry Jeudy, who has an unsettled quarterback situation. Devontae Smith, another player I feel like has an unsettled quarterback position. Tyler Boyd, who may be third in targets. I think there is a pretty big drop off there.
Okay, but I probably already have at least two wide receivers, and I still have Brandon Cooks on the board.
You don't have your flex.
I still have Brandon Cooks on the board. I still have all the rookies on the board. This is obviously a good, well, not all of them, not Chase, but most of the rookies on the board. I don't know. It's always easier to find wide receiver breakouts than... I'm going to stop myself. Is it? Sometimes those tight end breakouts can sneak up on you. But, all right, whatever. I think we've said our piece there with Hockenson. All right, good stuff. Good debate. Good debate. And some more in just a little bit. We got some news and notes. Big time news and notes today, actually. We're also very excited to talk about the Draftathon. Our fourth annual Draftathon supporting St. Jude will be on September 1st. Last year, we auctioned off fun fantasy football experiences like Zoom calls with our experts, custom Smack Talk videos, playing in a league with our experts, guest appearances on the podcast. What do you want to see offered this year to incentivize donations to St. Jude? All right, we're trying to raise as much money as we can for St. Jude. So you tell us, what do you want to see auctioned off this year? You can comment on this video on YouTube, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. You can comment in our Facebook group post, or you can send us an email at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Schrager looked like he wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, just any way you contact us, no matter what, we are open to ideas. Last year, we had a lot of fun with people playing in the Listener League because of this. People were doing Zoom calls with Heath at 11 p.m. while Heath was drinking a nice beer and they were drinking a beer too. Any ideas you have, we're trying to raise $100,000 for St. Jude. So leave a comment, send an email, tweet at us, any way to get in contact. We're going to raise a lot of money this fall, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
September 1st, our draft-a-thon. Be there. We'll obviously give you a lot more details as we get closer. All right, time for the news and notes. Frank Reich said that Jonathan Taylor has earned the right to be the main guy. Heath, does that mean anything to you?
I wish I could have been in the room and asked a follow-up. What does the main guy mean to you, Frank? Is that's not because yeah, I agree. We can disregard the 5 or 6 touches a game we were giving Jordan Wilkins and maybe not even give those to Marlon Mack. But is Nyheim Hines going away? Because I kind of that's the key. If Nyheim Hines goes away, then Jonathan Taylor might just be RB1 this year. But they've always kind of had that guy. And as long as they still have the third down back, it's I'm gonna not get any Jonathan Taylor as a top 6 pick.
Where are you guys at on Taylor versus Kelsey?
I'm on the Kelsey train, but I'm also big on the tight ends here. Big on those big 2 tight ends for me. Heath? And yes, I said 2 for a reason.
Heath? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm Kelsey.
Kelsey? Okay. What about in half PPR or non-PPR?
Non-PPR is the one place where yeah. I will take Jonathan Taylor as a top 5 pick.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Next news item. AJ Brown still recovering from offseason surgery on both knees. Dan, we knew he had the surgery, but we saw today he's still recovering, not 100% yet. Is this news to you?
No, not necessarily. We're too early in that in the cycle for it to be important news. If he's missing training camp, if he's missing potential preseason time, that's when we start to get worried. But remember, AJ Brown played through this injury last year and was still almost as impactful and effective as he was the year before. So the ceiling, I think the sky is only the limit for him. I mean, there is no limit for him. I think this season, I don't think Julio Jones is in the mix taking away defensive coverages and attention. So I'm not worried about it just yet.
Chargers offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi said that Mike Williams will play the X receiver position. So Heath, actually, this is big news. What does this mean?
That was the position that Michael Thomas played in New Orleans. And this offense we expect it to look a lot like the Saints offense. What he actually said, and I gave you the quote so that I didn't have to keep it up on my screen, but basically said he expects Mike Williams to fill up the stat sheet. I went in and added an extra percent to Mike Williams' target share. I haven't projected for a career high in targets, and not just because it's 17 games. He's a very interesting dude. I don't think there's any doubt about his talent in terms of catching the ball in traffic, in terms of what he can do in that area. He's kind of struggled maybe to get open, I guess, because he doesn't earn that many targets. But very interested in him in that wide receiver 4 range.
You think this is going to look like the Saints offense? Because is that good for Mike Williams? I mean, he's not Michael Thomas. I know they're going to play the same position, but we don't really think he's going to be running a lot of slants and things
like that. It's good for Mike Williams if they throw it to him a lot.
Yeah, yes.
Like, that's good for him.
That is true.
That is not something that's ever happened in his career.
ESPN report, the Patriots beat writer believes that Damian Harris is New England's number one running back, and it's pretty decisive. So, yeah, he's drafted pretty late, Dan. What do you think about Damian Harris? You there, Dan?
We've been playing fantasy for way too long, I think, to buy into late June, early July type report about how the Patriots are going to split up their backfield touches. I will believe this when I see it. Right now, I'm not. I mean, I still like Damian Harris anyway because I liked him as a prospect. I think he's the best pure runner they have on the roster. But I think there's a ceiling there. It's capped. It depends how good the Patriots are because they're going to need the game script to be good for him to be RB1 or even the high-end RB2 like, you know, some would expect based on that type of report. So, but I'll buy the touches thing when I see it first.
I moved him ahead of Zach Moss.
Oh, that was my next question. Are you going to take him over a Bills running back?
Yeah, I would too.
But Heath, who's your highest ranked Bills running back?
My highest ranked Bills running back is Devin Singletary. But I don't ever draft him until after I see Zach Moss get drafted because nobody else likes Devin Singletary.
It's possible the Bills don't because the Athletics beat writer for the Buffalo, Joe Biscaglia, believes that, first of all, he thinks that Emmanuel Sanders is more likely than Gabriel Davis to fill John Brown's role. But he also thinks that Zach Moss could take over, as the primary, I guess, more more of the primary responsibilities, I guess, if he continues to improve. And that Jacob Hollister could be the primary tight end if Dawson Knox continues to struggle. So there you go, a blitz of Bills items from the Athletic.
I would have liked to ask Joe also. I wish that had been on HQ, because I'd like to know, what if Devin Singletary continues to improve? Could he earn a majority of the running back touches?
I think the implication here is that Zach Moss has a lot to gain. You know, I think there's a reason why this was quoted and this was cited. I wouldn't like it if I were a Devin Singletary manager, you know, personally.
I just, like when it said Zach Moss could take over more responsibility if he continues to improve, that doesn't really sound like news to me. I think a lot of players in the NFL could get more touches if they continue to improve.
Okay. You know, the tight end note of this was actually pretty interesting to me, because the Bills have said since the end of last season that they need more production from their tight ends. And I was even thinking...
And there's more speculation building today, building off of what we've seen all offseason, that Zach Ertz is going to be traded to the Bills at any moment now. Now we've heard that all offseason, but it makes too much sense for it not to happen.
That would be pretty interesting. All right, we'll sit tight and wait and see if that happens. Saturday is a big day on CBS. It is Superstar Saturday Night, holiday style, at one of the most famous tracks in America, Lucas Oil Raceway in Indianapolis. Tony Stewart faces stiff competition from some of the top drivers in the world as he goes for his third straight win. Get ready for some fireworks this Independence Day weekend with the Camping World SRX Series, Saturday at 8 Eastern on CBS. All right. Players to avoid. Back to the topic du jour. Heath, your quarterback on this list is Josh Allen. You already gave us James Robinson, but you're saying Josh Allen. But frame it. Give us a little context there.
Well, can we please not put Josh Allen's name in the tweet when we send this podcast out? I do not need any more Twitter replies from Bills Mafia. Listen, I like Josh Allen. He made a massive leap last year. He's good. He's currently going at the 3-4 turn, around ahead of Lamar Jackson, who I would rather have, well ahead of Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson. And I don't think there's really that much difference in terms of upside and floor. What we've seen the past couple of years is when we've had these quarterbacks with the breakout performances, the next year there's usually a little bit of a drawing back. That's what I anticipate with Josh Allen as well. And so I'm just not willing. Like, I think there's one quarterback, and I've made this pretty clear, there's one quarterback who's worth investing a third round, maybe even late second round pick in fantasy, and that's Patrick Mahomes. And the reason is that over the last 3 years, he's been basically 3 or 4 points better per game than any other quarterback over that stretch of games. Josh Allen did it for 16 games, and that could lead to something in the future, but he's being drafted right now as if the quarterback we saw last year is either the new reality or a stepping stone to some other future greatnesses, which is what I've heard a lot as well. And it's more likely that Josh Allen's going to take a little bit of a step back this year. He could still be awesome, and that could be the case.
Okay, I want to release the Twitter poll results of this question. Who do you prefer in a 6 point per passing touchdown league? Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray. I just posted it. It's only 573 votes. So right now, Josh Allen has 41% of the vote. Second place is Dak Prescott at 38% of the vote. Kyler Murray, 14.5%, and Lamar Jackson, look at these results, 6.6%. These are shocking to me. Even in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues, where Josh Allen and Dak Prescott are crushing Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson.
And again, it's people believe that Lamar Jackson got exposed last year, but because Josh Allen's best year was last year, that his best year is more important than Lamar Jackson's, which was 2 years ago.
And right.
That's just not the way that I process information, and that's not the way that things generally work. Occasionally it does, but that's not the way things generally work.
Not to mention, when Jackson came back from COVID, he was close to back to himself.
Yeah, he was terrific.
Very close.
So I brought up Dak Prescott, Dan, because that's the quarterback on your list, your void list of is Dak Prescott. So what's your thought there?
So my thought with Dak Prescott is this. When he comes back now, he's a different player than what he was for the Cowboys before last season, because he now has this massive contract and he becomes a completely different asset for them. And part of what made Dak so special as a fantasy contributor in his, you know, first four seasons or five seasons before this contract was that he had 21. So before last season, he had 21 rushing TDs through his first four seasons. Then he had three in just five games in 2020. So 24 in four and a quarter season. And a lot of those touchdowns were not long breaking runs like sometimes you see from Allen and a lot of times you see from Lamar Jackson. They were zone read options in the red zone where they actively use Dak Prescott as a runner there. And I just don't know that that's going to continue for the Cowboys moving forward now that they invested this. Also, a big factor in what made him such a special fantasy quarterback was game script and pace. And the Cowboys had the best they had the best offensive pace, last season in 2020. And not only that, they had one of the worst defenses in the NFL. This year, they used their entire draft class, 10 plus picks on the defensive side of the ball. They've been an excellent decision, in my mind, to go from Mike Nolan's defensive system to Dan Quinn, who I think may not be the best coach, head coach, but he's a great defensive coordinator. And if that defense takes a solid size leap, the game script is going to look a lot different for Dak. Even in his first few seasons, he threw for 3,600 yards, 3,300 yards, and 3,800 yards. Then 2019, when the Cowboys defense collapsed and they had their first non-winning season in his career,
they didn't collapse.
He threw for 4,900 yards. So if that game script,
the
Cowboys?
Yeah, they were middle of the pack in defense that year. They were in
2019. The full collapse was last year. When he was gone,
they were 11th. They were 11th in scoring defense in 2019. I'll double check on that just to make sure that's okay. Right, because that is a pretty big point here. I don't see how they could possibly be 11th in scoring defense this year. They were almost last. They were terrible last year. In addition to having bad personnel, they got super injured, especially in the middle of their defense. So I get it, all those things. And the game scripts, they play the Rams in week one, and then the next three games were against bad defenses in high-scoring shootouts. Right. So it was perfect for Dak, absolutely. A lot of interesting points there.
Go ahead, Heath.
No, it's that, like, your explanation of the defense, I generally explain that same jump with Kellen Moore. That he was the force behind the change in the offense and the running more plays and the going more pass heavy. And we don't necessarily know, because both of those things did kind of happen in with each other. As far as the rushing touchdowns, it's interesting. He has scored at a pretty similar rate to Josh Allen on a per rush attempt basis. Now, Allen runs a lot more, but on a per attempt basis, it hasn't really been that much different. But I guess Allen hasn't got the contract yet.
He's not coming off the major injury as well.
Right.
Yeah.
I just think that Dak's weapons are so good, and Kellen Moore has been so good for him. It's hard for me to see him taking him. I agree with you guys completely. It's almost as if he was so good last year in those first five games that gets used as a talking point about how he can't be that good.
True.
We don't have to look at those games at all. We can just look at 2019. Mm-hmm. And he just has to be that good.
So two things. Yeah. They were 11th in scoring defense in 2019 when Prescott was the number two quarterback in fantasy, but they were not a good defense. They were 24th in yards allowed. Now, what really matters is the points, right? Were they chasing the points? They were 11th, but we know that they did not have a good defense, and it's not going to be good this year. It's going to be better than last year, but I can't imagine, even with all those rookies, you know, I can't project them to have a good defense. I don't think anybody would project them to have a good defense. What does this mean to you? In 2000, and you could probably make this stat for like every quarterback, but his 2019 fantasy point total made him QB2. He would have been QB9 in 2020. Does that mean anything to you with that fantasy point total?
Last year was insane.
Actually, Chris just did an excellent job. Chris just did an excellent job breaking this down in the FFT newsletter. For those of you who are listening and haven't signed up, go ahead and sign up for that. I think it's an excellent newsletter and it delivers some actionable advice in every single one. Shameless plug there. But what he said was basically you don't want to chase one-year trends. And if you look back at it, yes, in 2020, there was the trend of the high-end quarterback that was worth paying up for. But this goes into my point as to why I don't want to take Dak Prescott at 47 overall ADP when I can get somebody like Tom Brady at 74th overall ADP, who I probably still wouldn't take. But if Prescott stops running, they seem like very similar fantasy assets to me. And the point is that, you know, in the past, using 2020 to base our 2021 strategy isn't an excellent play because the drop off at quarterback hasn't been steep, which is why in past years, which is why, of course, people advised for the late round quarterback strategy and these are all, of course, for one quarterback leagues. Obviously, we wouldn't have the same advice in leagues where you need to start two quarterbacks, but in leagues where only 12 of the 32 are starting each week, it just seems like you're chasing last year's trend it's kind of what goes back to what Heath was saying. Are we going to look at just the 1 year sample size? Or are we going to look at the larger sample size? And the larger sample size suggests that the difference at the quarterbacks at the top of the tier isn't going to be that great.
Yeah. But if Prescott's toward the end of that tier and
he's still going in the top 50 pick.
He's 50th, right? 40. Oh no, he's 48th. All right. So you just don't want anyone that early. You're saying
if I'm going to take a quarterback that early, I have to be sure that he's going to be able to provide me rushing stats as well. And I'm just not sure of that with Prescott right now.
Okay.
Or be Patrick Mahomes.
That's fair. Fair enough. Okay. Then let's take a look at some more players. Fair enough is the Adam Azer drinking game, by the way. So I've been pretty hammered right now. Let's go to tight ends. We had Hockenson for Dan and Kyle Pitts for Heath. Okay. So Pitts is now tight end 4, Heath? Yeah.
He is tight end 4 at pick 52, 10 picks ahead of TJ Hockenson and 12 picks ahead of Mark Andrews, 30 picks ahead of Dallas Goedert, and 40 picks ahead of Noah Fant.
Wait, what was it, 52?
Overall? 52 okay. Overall.
I was just looking. That's since June 1st. I was looking since June 15th. He's 51. Because I just had this feeling that he's just going to keep skyrocketing up, but I was just holding steady 51, 52.
Yeah, I just like, and this is one that's uncomfortable because I love Kyle Pitts. I got as much of him as I could in rookie drafts because I was afraid this was going to happen in redraft. But you are drafting Kyle Pitts to be the greatest rookie tight end ever. And if he's that, then yes, he will justify his ADP. he has to be better than that to earn you a profit at his ADP. And that's just not, there are certain players where I understand the talent or like Derrick Henry's been at the last 2 years. He's broken a lot of our unwritten rules of fantasy, but I don't think you make a profit very often in fantasy drafting a guy where he has to do that.
Mm. Okay. I think that's pretty well said. So when would you take him? And do you have him ranked ahead of Hockenson or Andrews?
No. In non-PPR, I might actually have him ahead of Hockenson. In full PPR, I've got him 6th in non and 8th in full PPR. I would not take him until round 7.
Ooh.
So right. I'm not going to get
him. No pits for you.
Again, this is how ridiculous it's gotten. I'm saying I won't take the rookie tight end until round 7. And it's like, whoa, that's a hot take.
It is hot. It is. Yeah.
It's still a rookie tight end.
Yeah. Well, here's the Twitter poll. Who do you like in PPR? Hockenson, Pitts, or Andrews? Schrager got the results. Ready? Ready to find it?
Let's pull them up.
I'll wait for the video. Who do you like in PPR? Hockenson, Pitts, or Andrews? Who do you think's winning?
I would assume Pitts.
Dan, you want to make
a guess
there?
2.
It's Pitts for me for sure.
Oh, you're going Pitts. Okay. Yeah, there it is. It's Pitts.
To be a little contrarian.
He's
not contrarian.
Do you mind him 52nd overall? He's got 40% of the vote here.
Yeah, not contrarian. I guess not contrarian consensus, but to go against Heath's argument, I think Heath made an excellent point there. I mean, his argument was incredibly logically sound. You're making a bad bet, but I'm willing to bet on Pitts being an outlier. And this goes a lot into, I did prospect profiles for CBS Sports during the draft season, and he's one of the best prospects I've evaluated in the last 10 years. And it's not just his ability as a tight end when he's lined up in line or when he's detached a bit from the formation. At Florida, he was the entire offense there. He was the focal point of every passing play, and they would detach him from the formation and line him up against corners, including J.C. Horn, who was selected in the top 10, and Patrick Surtain at Alabama, who was selected just in the top 10 as well. And he would beat them in one-on-one coverage. He has abilities that are very different from any tight end that has ever played the position, in my opinion. He profiles to me more like Calvin Johnson than anyone else I've seen, than any tight end I could compare him to, I guess I would say. And so I think this offense will potentially run through both him and Ridley. I think they're going to be behind in a lot of games again, Atlanta, throwing the football a lot. And to me, I'm willing to bet on the outlier, because the upside to Pitts to me at 50, when you consider the positional advantage you can get at tight end and what Darren Waller, for example, gave us. And I believe Waller was drafted a little ahead of this range last year, but not too far ahead. And the advantage he gave you from the season he had at tight end versus all the other trash that most people were putting in their starting lineups at the position is worth the gamble to me versus some of the guys being selected there, like Kareem Hunt, DJ Moore, people that I don't think are going to be game changers potentially in that range.
So you think that, like, as a rookie, Kyle Pitts has more upside than Mark Andrews?
I do think that, honestly. I feel like he's a completely different prospect than Mark Andrews. I think he's better beating man coverage. I think he's better in contested catch situations. I just really love him as a prospect.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. We've got some running backs and wide receivers to talk about on the avoid list. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Okay, let's get some running backs and wide receivers. Let's go to Dan. He's got Miles Sanders and Josh Jacobs. They're going within 6 picks of each other right now, according to NFC ADP. Sanders 35th and Jacobs 41st. So tell me why you are not taking Miles Sanders at 35.
Yeah, we'll start with Sanders. These guys both fit into that dead zone, that running back dead zone that I like to always avoid. I know Ben Gretsch kind of termed it the dead zone. I think it's a good term for what it is. And when you're in that range after the second round, in that third through fifth round range, when you could be getting these stud receivers, potentially a stud tight end or quarterback, you're taking these players at running back because you need to fill the position. But Miles Sanders, what can we count on for him in 2021? First of all, Nick Sirianni coming over as the head coach means that he may not be used anymore in a workhorse role. We've seen the type of split he's had with his running backs over in Indianapolis. And the Eagles already this offseason have hinted that they won't rely on Sanders as the workhorse. And this is just 1 year after Deuce Staley, who's no longer coaching with the team, said he would be the workhorse. And if you look at that and you consider the fact that the volume may not be there, you then move on to Sanders as a prospect. And he's really been a middling player in the NFL. Last year, he had the 18th best elusive rating. And in my mind, it's the best advanced stat to use to kind of determine how effective a running back is independent of everything else around him, because it combines forced missed tackles and yards after contact. He also has an aging offensive line that's dealt with reoccurring injuries to some of its best players. And the big thing for me here is that I just don't trust Jalen Hurts yet, because from what I've seen from the little film that he has out there, he had a really tough time operating from within the structure of the offense. Hurts, he bailed from the pockets too early. He didn't keep that passing game on time, and it led to a lot of punts for the Eagles. So if that offense isn't great, with an aging offensive line and a potential non-workhorse role and a prospect and a player in Miles Sanders who hasn't been that great on his own in the NFL, at 35 overall, that seems incredibly rich.
All right, Heath, what's your reaction to that? Dan, you got some hot takes. I like it. I like it. Some strong takes, man.
This is right about where I have Sanders. I don't know that I don't get particularly excited.
Not coming hot.
A lot of what he's saying is what I said about Miles Sanders when we were taking him at the 1-2 turn last year. It's a little bit different at the 3-4 turn. I was the guy when Ben Gretsch was formulating the dead zone last year. We had a lot of long, long, long discussions about that. And generally speaking, from what we discussed, the guys who do break out of that dead zone, because there are some every year, are the younger running backs. Right. It's more of a dead zone, it seems, for the 26, 27, 28-year-old running backs than it is for guys that are 23. I don't have quite as many concerns about Jalen Hurts. And one thing that running quarterbacks generally do is open up more holes for their running back. So I think, well, I don't expect Sanders to be a workhorse. You don't get workhorse running backs at the end of round three or the start of round four. They go in round one or round two.
It's true. Yeah. So then people might say, well, then just don't draft any, but,
my thing.
But I think it's a little bit too rigid of a take because Sanders and Jacobs both have big upside. I mean, I think they've proven that. If you think the situations have changed so much, and I think the argument's more to make there for Jacobs because of the Kenyon Drake addition, then I can understand that. But I really don't want to hold too much against Sanders from last year. The Eagles were a mess. Their offensive line was awful. I mean, awful. And, you know, you talked about, Dan, how Jalen Hurts bailed from the pocket too early. I have watched a lot of Jalen Hurts, the four starts that he made, and maybe there was some of that, but he was really running for his life so much. It was just an awful offensive line. And not only that, if they stay healthy, they could have a good to great offensive line. I mean, they really could have a high-performing one. And that could make a huge difference here. So I would love to see Miles Sanders fall to the fourth round. He's almost there. He's 35th. He's almost there. So, you know, we'll get there. Hopefully. I'll take
the Kenyon Drake thing, because you said it, and Dan's going to give his anti Josh Jacobs take in just a minute, but you said that Josh Jacobs has a lot more competition because of Kenyon Drake.
That's basically
Kenyon
what
Drake
I said,
spent 4 years as a backup running back, got a chance to be the starter in Arizona, got 1 year, and then had to sign a deal as a backup again.
Who is taking Kenyon carries Drake, away from Miles Sanders, though?
Kenyon Drake, who's going
to. It's
not
to about the carries, though.
Kerryon Johnson.
No,
it's not about the carry. That's not the issue for me, Adam. The carries are not the issue for me with Sanders. Carries are not worth that much in fantasy anymore if you're playing in 0.5 PPR leagues or full point PPR.
They are. They are if they're near the goal line. And
they are if they're near the goal line, and they are if you're on a team that's winning a lot of football games, which I don't think the Eagles will be. And they are on a team that has if you have a really good offense, which I don't think the Eagles will be with Jalen Hurts.
They get to play in the NFC East.
That is a nice plus.
Nobody
but
won
the Giants defense has improved, and so has the Redskins.
But and then the other assumption that Kenyon Drake's just going to take all of the running back targets away from Josh Jacobs. Kenyon Drake has one season in the NFL where he's been above average as a pass catcher.
I didn't make that assumption, first of all, but I think that Kenyon Drake is stiffer competition to Josh Jacobs, who, by the way, only had 33 catches in 15 games last year.
Pass catching running back.
They had 69 catches among their top three running backs last year. Their last three seasons under John Gruden, 101 catches for their top three running backs, 92, and then 69. So hopefully that goes back up.
Has Josh Jacobs been worth a fourth round pick in that environment?
Yeah, I think he's fine in the fourth round. I do.
Last year he couldn't have been.
He was a top 12 running back. He was top 8 running back, and I think it was a little deceiving because he was so inconsistent. But he did score 12 touchdowns.
Those end of season.
Well, but he had 13.
Yeah, those end of season numbers. I'm not.
No, look, he was a top 8 running back per game. He was 13th in PPR, 10th in non PPR. You could say that based on that he was worth a first round pick. I would say no because after week one he scored 3 touchdowns. In week one after week one he. Really had just a few big games and a lot of crap. You like more consistency, but he definitely was worth a fourth round pick. But I'll let you, Dan, he's on your list. So you make the pick, you make the case 41st for Josh Jacobs. The first two running backs selected in the 2018-19 draft, Miles Sanders and Josh Jacobs, both on your list here, 41st for him. So you think that's too rich for your blood, to borrow a poker term, and I beat you in poker last night. So go ahead.
You did beat me in poker, Adam, but I will be getting my revenge at some point. But I will say this about Josh Jacobs. One of the reasons I don't like him is because of the change in Derek Carr's play as a quarterback. As you mentioned last year, 69 targets to running backs. Jacobs had just 33 in 15 games.
No,
Derek Carr's made a big game.
Catches.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
69 catches, and that was the top three running backs, so there are probably a few more. Sure. It's probably a little over 70. Yeah.
Sure. And by the way, those players are still on the roster currently. Both Theo Riddick and Jalen Richard are currently still on the roster, and I'm not sure they're going away, but Derek Carr's made a big change to his game. He's throwing downfield a lot more often. It's a total different change to who he is as a quarterback. And so if that's the case, and you're buying into an offense that we don't think is going to be that good, one that lost arguably one of their best offensive linemen and instead replaced him by one of the biggest reaches in the draft, according to most people, including myself and Alex Leatherwood, who was a better guard than a tackle at Alabama, but also played his entire career on the left side and is now being asked to move to right tackle, which is not an easy transition. I think will also make things tough for Penei Sewell over in Detroit. But besides that, it's an aging offensive line. They've already lost Rodney Hudson there as well. They were also 23rd in offensive play pace in neutral situations last year and just 24th when trailing by 7 points or more. This is a really slow offense as well. And so factoring in all those things and the potential for him to be off the field on passing downs, I just don't really see the upside except for the games when they're ahead. And I'm not so sure how many, like Josh Jacobs got off to a bang last year, right? He had 25 carries in his first game, 27 in his second one. The Raiders won both of those games. But if you look at all the games where the Raiders were trailing by a lot and they were way behind, against Atlanta when they got blown out, he saw 10 total touches. Another game where they got blown out, I believe it was Indianapolis, he had 16 total touches. So I just don't know what you're hoping is the upside there. If the Raiders offense is going to be slow, not so good, he's not going to be on the field in passing downs when Drake is there. And even so, even if you add this in, this little wrinkle, Drake was decently effective in the red zone for Arizona last year. So are we sure he's not going to siphon some carries there? And then the final thing for me is just he hasn't been as good as he's been projected as a prospect. I know he was drafted high, but like I said, I like to use elusive rating, and that showed that Miles Sanders was middling. Jacobs was really bad elusive rating-wise last year.
What about 2018? What about 2019, though?
In 2019, I can pull that up right now, but
he was last really year, he good was behind, in 2019.
Last year, he was behind guys like Brian Hill and James Conner. And if you look at just 2019, let's take a look at that one.
You're looking that up. The Atlanta game where he had 10 touches, I believe he left that due to injury. He didn't play the next week.
Okay. That's a good recall on that. I didn't remember that one. But you're right, Adam. In 2019, he was the second best. He had the second best elusive rating. So he was definitely a better player then than he was now. But I don't know. That's the final factor. The other ones are more important to me. I just don't see the upside for volume. I don't love that offense at all. And if he doesn't have a lot of volume or scoring opportunities, I don't really see. Or a role in the passing game, I don't really see the upside there.
So you think a big Kenyon Drake's going to take a lot more touches than Booker and Jalen Richard did last year?
I think all three of them are going to get a decent share of touches, and just overall, it's going to be more than what they had last year without Drake, I should say.
I think they will, Heath, because when Josh Jacobs was healthy, those guys were getting something like, well, Jacobs was getting 18 carries a game, and those guys were getting something like 6 carries a game. Now you look at the overall season numbers, a lot of that might be the games that Jacobs missed, but you have to look at just when Jacobs was healthy. So I do think Drake has more of a role than Richard had. I think it's probably going to come down to touchdowns. If Drake starts taking touchdowns away, that's going to be a problem. If he doesn't, then I think Jacobs is going to be perfectly fine in round 4.
And I wouldn't ever underestimate the ability of John Gruden to make poor decisions, but it's really a stretch to look at Kenyon Drake's pedigree and his career and Josh Jacobs' pedigree and his career and think, I need to give the ball to Kenyon Drake more and sit Josh Jacobs down more.
Well, but they think, you know, the theory is that he hasn't been able to hold up. And that was a problem with him in college, too. So I think they're trying to, you know, maybe the theory, they're trying to keep him fresher and give him a better.
Yeah, he was never a workhorse at Alabama. He never had that role. You're right.
And he did play 15 games.
That's another major red flag.
In 15 games last
year. He played 15 games. He did, but he left one early. You know, he missed one, but he played 13 games as a rookie. And, you know, is he banged up? Is he on the injury report a lot? I think that they want to keep him fresher. Maybe. That's a theory. We'll see how it plays out. We're going to do one more here. We're going to leave some for Fantasy Football Today in 5. If you're listening to this show and you want to hear the George Kittle argument, because we got to hear that, and you want to hear the Odell Beckham argument, because you got to hear that, that's on FFT in 5. We're going to end this show with Michael Carter. Heath, Michael Carter, 81st overall, but you're just not that into him at 81st overall.
I am just not that. And you compare him. I did a Twitter poll earlier with Damian Harris and Trey Sermon and Michael Carter asking who people preferred because he's been drafting the same range as those guys. I think Michael Carter is a part-time running back on what's probably a bad team. And I'm just not into that. It really just like, I don't think there's a scenario. A lot of these part-time backs that you can take in the round six, round seven range, you can say, man, if there's an injury, that guy might be a 15 to 20 touch per game guy. I don't think Michael Carter turns into a 15 to 20 touch per game guy in any reality. And so, and I don't think there's like a particular high efficiency upside with him in this particular offense. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that I think he's going to be a bad running back. I just don't think he's a difference-making running back, and this is a bad situation.
Why don't you think he could get those touches, though? Why don't you think they could say, all right, Tevin Coleman, you're out of here. The Michael Pirine, like, let's just let Michael Carter be the main guy.
Well, he's going to a coaching staff that came from San Francisco where they always had a two-back system, and he was always in a two-back system in college. He was, again, talk about Josh Jacobs, he was much less of a feature back than Josh Jacobs was. So his coaching staff's history and his player and the player history is why.
Okay.
Yeah, Heath nailed it. Everybody's downgrading Trey Sermon for this exact reason, that he's in this Kyle Shanahan offense to the Kyle Shanahan offense with the Jets. And so why do we assume they're going to have a lead back, especially someone like he said, who never had that role in college when Javonte Williams was alongside him?
Yeah. I think personally, I think that good coordinators adapt to their personnel. And I also think that it was pretty obvious that the first four games of the season are the ones that Mostert played. Raheem Mostert, they recognized that he was their best back, and they treated him as such. I can tell you, you know, yeah. I can go through the numbers. You probably look at the numbers and say, oh, no, that's not true. But I could definitely make a case that Raheem Mostert was as close to workhorse, as you're going to get. He wasn't involved in the passing game, but they treated him like the alpha running back, and then he broke down. You know, I can remember Adam Gase, who's obviously awful, but having a reputation of being this quarterback whisperer. And then he said, well, Jay Ajayi is basically my best player. I have to get Jay. We didn't think Jay Ajayi would get the carries with the Dolphins because Adam Gase had this reputation. But I just think that if you're a good coordinator, if you're a good coach, you adapt to your personnel. So if Carter, I just think that the other running backs stink. I just think they stink.
Well, he's also a day three running back.
He is, but he was what, the fifth one drafted? And he was barely drafted after Trey Sermon. So I'm not going to, you know, put Sermon on another level because they were pretty close to each other.
Right. Sermon
said Carter was a better prospect.
I think Carter has the passing game opportunities that Sermon won't, you know?
But will that system ever be a system that utilizes the running back in the passing game? Because it hasn't been typically with San Francisco.
Well, San Francisco drafted Trey Sermon. The Jets drafted Michael Carter. Why would you draft Michael Carter if you're just going to try to be San Francisco? You know,
because I think they felt like he's a really good fit for that wide zone blocking scheme. He's a one cut and go runner. And I think that's similar to why the 49ers drafted Sermon, by the way. But I don't know if it was because they envisioned his role in the passing game as much as they just envisioned his role in that wide zone blocking scheme.
Okay. Just all right, 81st overall, and other running backs going in that range include, where are you, Michael Carter? Trey Sermon, Ronald Jones, Raheem Mostert. Let's see where Damian Harris is going. Damian Harris is 101st.
And I would take every name you've said so far, I think, over Michael Carter.
How is Leonard Fournette going this late? Feels like I'm fine with that. I just feel like most people are taking
the Geo signing.
The Geo signing, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like he goes earlier in our drafts. All right, that's it for today's show. Great stuff again from Dan Schneier. Tomorrow, we've got another top five list for you on Fantasy Football Today. Right now, if you're done with this episode, come on over to Fantasy Football Today in 5. Subscribe to that podcast. It's only 5 extra minutes. And we're going to talk about George Kittle, and we're going to talk about Odell Beckham. But for now, I'm saying goodbye on the Fantasy Football Today podcast. And again, thanks to Dan, Heath, and Ben. I'm Adam. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.